Okay, we're here to talk about power line expansion in Columbia County, which
I see Pam Klein.
I think our audience knows something about, but we'll tell them what's happening with Ian Solomon and Will Yandick and Pam Klein.
Who wants to talk first?
All of whom are part of an organization which has been formed as a coalition of other organizations. And the name of that organization is?
Yeah, this group was formed around the start of the year, end of last year, called the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition. And it's a group of, there are 16 member groups. And that consists of everything from town government representatives, we have town supervisors, county government representatives, historic preservation organizations, land trusts, environmental organizations, basically anyone who's got a stake in this and wants to see it more fully examined. And we're able to pool our resources, get together around a table, and bring a lot of expertise. We have former transmission engineers in the group, and it's been a great way to get a hold of knowledge and to kick ideas around that we wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to do.
And the issue is the expansion of power lines through Columbia County and Dutchess County, too, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's been around a little while, but I think county residents became aware of this toward the end of last year, that these proposals were out there. This is kind of a first-of-its-kind proceeding, the particular one that stands to impact us in Columbia County. And just in the way of some really quick background, you know, they opened it up for bids from anyone who wanted to put in an application for the project. We ended up with bids from four competing entities who all proposed to do things a little differently. One of the groups owns all of the existing infrastructure, so their proposals are probably a little more detailed, also
cheaper.
Much more expensive, surprisingly.
Oh.
Much more expensive. Yeah, and then some of the others talk about either using or not using the existing corridor, and there's some question about legally whether it would even be feasible for them to do so. And, of course, if it's not, then you have multiple applicants who are talking about taking new land by eminent domain.
But the big development, the reason you're here, I thought, was that there's a new development in this story.
There is. That's right. Will?
That's right. The coalition that Ian references, the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition, is very lucky to come in contact with a professor who researches at Bard. He has his PhD from Columbia. He has published several technical books about how to model various environmental factors. And he owns property in the region and is generally concerned with this issue. And it's a very complicated model. We're going to unpack it next Saturday, but the gist of it is that he's looked at all of the sources of power generation that exist both downstate and upstate currently and into the future. He has looked at how the demand for electricity will change in New York City relative to population growth, relative to climate change factors. I mean, when the PSC says we have a quote-unquote congestion problem, what they aren't telling you is that the only time of the year there is any issue at all are literally a few afternoons in July and August during heat waves between 4 and 6 o'clock. And so the temperature of our peak summer temperature is really the only thing that matters. What Guidon is going to show through his modeling is that the state has more than enough capacity, both generation and capacity, into the foreseeable future. It really puts into question whether we want to spend $1.3 billion for an expensive solution for a problem that doesn't exist.
Now, when we last had you here, one of the things you guys were talking about, was the infrastructure and how the problem was they were using an outmoded structure and they didn't need these big power lines. So is this like a next stage where you're thinking not only do they not need the power lines, they don't need to change anything?
That's right. So what we're here to say Saturday, before we talk about undergrounding lines, before we debate about impacts to our communities or how tall a tower is, let's take a step back. And we're placed in this very awkward role because the Public Service Commission, remember, this is a regulatory agency whose traditional job has been to vet projects before them. They have been placed for the very first time in this strange new role as a contractor. So the same group that has solicited these projects will then evaluate need after the utilities submit those projects. If that seems to violate your sense of common sense,
so you're saying
it does ours as well.
What motivated PSC to contact the contractors, to put it out there for bidding?
That's Governor Cuomo's agenda and initiative through the Energy Highway Program.
So it was a decision by the governor to say we need more energy going downstate.
Correct. The governor,
based on what?
The governor has a white paper called the Energy Highway, which looks at how New York should develop its energy and transmission capacity going forward, and that's what places the impetus, that's what started this whole thing.
So that white paper is really, with the new research, that's what's at issue?
Is it a
challenge to the white paper information about the capacity and what's needed?
Well, that's right. So we have a highly technical individual who's saying to, frankly, mid-level political appointees at the PSC, you sort of uncritically cite these numbers without backing up the data behind it. Here's the work that I did that directly refutes some of the conclusions of those white papers.
Is there a problem with industry being too close to the PSC?
That's kind of hard to say. I think what we can say is that we know the PSC relies on the New York Independent Systems Operator for a lot of its data, and we know that that organization is filled with former industry professionals, and even though they might not think of themselves as being biased one way or the other, I think our life experience forms our bias, mm-hmm. whether we want it to or not. So I think in that way, there is that concern. I can't say definitively that's been the cause of decisions that were made, but I think it would be foolish not to look at that as a question.
Right. On the other hand, there are going to be those who say it's one hippie bard professor.
Sure.
How do you answer that?
The answer to that is quite simply that his work is peer-reviewed, transparent work. So we're really challenging the PSC to match that level of mm-hmm. transparency. If the state believes that we need to spend $1.3 billion to destroy the tourism economy of the Hudson Valley, to take people's land, to mar the cultural landscape, historic landscape, our farms, then prove it. Show it. Don't cite a white paper that states we need 1,000 megawatts of increased capacity without showing the reason for that. So Guidon has done that in his report, which we will share with regulators, and he welcomes debate. He is hungry for that debate. But it's open and it's transparent, and we challenge the PSC to match that standard.
What happened to the original challenge about not having to upgrade the infrastructure the way it was proposed and just using much simpler lines? I remember that was what you were talking about a couple months ago. And
yeah, I think that's a conversation that can still happen. Okay. I think that's... that's a little bit putting the cart before the horse.
So you're taking a step further back into the process.
Yeah.
That might not even have to happen.
I think everyone sort of saw this assumption of need and without questioning it, thought it came from a place,
right.
a data-driven place. And really, it's not data-driven. It was a figure someone threw out. And I think this is the first real attempt, especially independent attempt, to quantify this need and to bring up a public discussion about it.
It has mostly to do with the transmission, right? Is that what?
Correct. So in this white paper that we cite, there's something called the Central East Constraint. It's a bottleneck, basically. And the claim is that it limits transmission capacity from upstate to downstate during periods of peak load and demand. But again, the key thing to remember is that the only times of year in which there is even an issue of congestion are only during those summer peak loads. And so the question remains, do you build a $1.3 billion solution to a problem that might be better fixed by giving an air conditioning tax credit for apartments in Brooklyn?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it kind of sounds like the local, the county issue involving the airport. You know, they kept going further back in understanding the issue and finding out that the entire debate was based on a premise that just wasn't accurate.
It's possible to get pretty far down the road with these projects before somebody says, wait a minute, why are we doing this?
How did this get started?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's the moment that we're at right now.
Mm-hmm. And again, just to continue that thought, it's very difficult. It's still very difficult for those of us who are opposing this project to understand the rationale numbers because the non-governmental agency that Ian references, the New York independent system operators, which basically manages the grid, they have gone on the record as saying that their models are proprietary and not available for public discourse. So we're very fortunate to have someone living in our community, Guidon Eschel, with the statistical, the technological, the scientific capability to do these kinds of independent studies, because that's really above and beyond what the layperson can do.
So the Saturday meeting, Mr. Eschel, it's Guidon.
Dr. Eschel.
Dr. Eschel, E-S-H-E-L, is you're going to be unveiling the findings or his research?
Yes, this Saturday, October 18th at 1 o'clock until perhaps about 3.
Where?
We will be having this first-time public viewing, so to speak, of Dr. Eschel's work. It will be at the Churchtown Firehouse, which is on Route 27 in Churchtown.
That was Pam Klein, by the way.
Yeah, and Dr. Eschel will be, he'll be taking us through the process used to come up with this. So as we've said before, it's meant to be a fully transparent model. So he'll start from the beginning, he'll explain everything that went into the model, what data were used, how it was processed, and sort of show the calculations almost at every step to the level that most of us can understand them, and walk us through how he got to that conclusion, so that if anyone else ever wants to dive in and start to do some work with this model, it's out there, it's public.
Has it already been submitted to the PSC?
I don't know the schedule for submitting, but it will be before the event.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't had an official response to his research yet?
No.
Has there been
Right, that's a key point. We have not had an official response from state regulators because we're in the process of sharing that with them. But it is important to note that the hippie from Bard that you referenced, his work has been validated and gone through the peer-reviewed process through several postdoc reviews. And those have done everything from validating the statistical packages that he used, looking at his methodology, and so forth. That process is complete, and he received several overwhelmingly positive feedback in that process.
So, you know, back when we were talking about this, I don't know how long ago it was when you were all here, one of the issues that industry, or not just so much industry, but there was opposition from electrical workers. They thought that this whole project was a source of more work. Do you think there's a sense that this whole thing is just an effort to create work for the electrical workers?
I wouldn't go that far. A point of clarity that still remains on the table. The lines that grow through my town in Livingston, they're owned by National Grid, and if at any point they wish to update those lines, then that is their prerogative. And that certainly is a jobs opportunity. What's at stake here is, do we really need increased capacity? And those increased capacities, they place limits on the community because that requires either taller towers or wider towers or eminent domain. So if it's merely a question of replacing out an old dated infrastructure, which is a great thing. I mean, how many of us in this room drive around Columbia County and see bridges and other infrastructure that we wish would be updated? Those opportunities are on the table. They will always be on the table. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a dramatic increase in capacity that we believe, and Dr. Guidon's research supports, is not needed.
I'm raising these questions just because I'm trying to anticipate what the opposition is going to say to you guys. You know, I'm just curious what, you know, once you wonder, of course, as you said, a reasonable person will see this research and say, well, it's obvious. But I'm sure there's going to be an answer, an official answer of some sort. Do you have any ideas what you face in the future?
Well, I think that's the reason we're trying to really keep it to data. You know, we're not dealing in conjecture, and we're not dealing in opinion.
Right.
We're
so trying it's not to get anti-worker, anti-business. It's,
right. Yeah. We're trying to put the facts on the table, and we of course support people's desire
anti-electricity
to have
even.
Work. Yeah. We all enjoy electricity, and we would hate to see it go away. I think if our point was that all electrical lines and towers need to go away, I think we'd have a much harder time having a rational discourse. Mm. But I think
see that, Alan? Because I know you want them all to go away.
Well, you know.
Okay. She's a Luddite.
Sure. I think it's just important to get to have a factual discussion and to ensure that if electrical workers and transmission engineers are going to be doing work, that they're doing work that really benefits all of us instead of is being done for possibly a different reason.
The only thing I would add to that is that even the utility executives themselves will tell you. They look into their crystal ball and they see this truthfully as the last dying days of the transmission build-out. And the reason for that is the lines that went through my farm were literally put there in the 1930s. It was an outdated model where you produce at point A and you deliver that power to point B, a city. The future overwhelmingly belongs to microgrids and diffuse energy production. There's no reason whatsoever in 50 years we can't expect there to be solar panels on most of the rooftops of New York City. It just makes sense. From a physics perspective, you lose a lot of energy as you transmit large amounts of energy over large distances. It makes sense to build near where the power is being used, and overwhelmingly the population trends are downstate and not upstate. So again, where is all this power that needs to be delivered from upstate to downstate? Even the International Panel of Climate Change cites reports that show that if you want to develop wind energy, which is, again, something that the governor says to polish his green image, he's going to get wind energy from the Tug Hill Plateau in upstate New York down to New York. There just aren't the physics that support that system. If you're going to put wind anywhere, it's going to be off the shore of Long Island, which is politically more difficult for him, but physically accurate.
Yeah, and I should add, without naming anyone or getting anyone into trouble, we spoke with...
we'd like to get people into trouble here.
We spoke
Don't
with
we
a very senior engineer who's involved with this work, who told us, and is not necessarily on our side in every way, who said, this is not a conversation people will be having in 30 years because this type of work won't need to be done anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think we're talking about... I mean, what we're really trying to do is raise the question... If it's not even going to be a conversation in 30 years, why should we spend $1.3 billion for something that will be around for 100 years?
Good point.
Who will benefit most from that $1.3 billion?
Whoever it gets paid to.
An energy provider, in other words.
Yeah, the developer doing the work. Yeah, and they have a guaranteed rate of return on their work. It's a fact that in the energy industry, the largest source of profits for the companies are in expanding their customer base. We're at the point now where customers, any possible customer has been reached for the most part. You know, electricity extends into the deepest rural areas. Everyone already has electricity. Their source of profit is really drying up. They're on a maintenance course if they're just selling electricity every year. The guaranteed source of profit that they have now is in infrastructure investments. If they can get the government to approve an expensive proposal, they get a guaranteed rate of return, guaranteed profit.
Which reminds me of these bizarre efforts in certain states to penalize solar users because it's denying income to the traditional sources of energy.
Sure, yeah, that's another side of the same coin. Yep.
Well, Ellen.
I just want to tell people that if they can't make it to the Churchtown Firehouse, Pam, there's a second meeting?
There is. There will be one at Bard College on November 1st at 2 o'clock in the multipurpose room of the, is it the students?
The Bertelsmann Campus Center.
Bertelsmann Campus Center.
And I know you've been circulating a petition. Who is the petition going to?
The petition is to Governor Cuomo, and it's to ask him to... find a way that does not destroy the Hudson River Valley to, we didn't address the need issue in the petition, but we did ask him to work with us and find something that's less impactful.
We did get a little mention of need in there. We ask in the petition that projects only be considered that have been proven to meet a specific need and also respect the character of the Hudson Valley.
And well, how many signatures do you have so far, do you know?
I do. We have a little over 5,000 right now.
Wow,
and you just started
a few days ago.
I'm
pleased to tell you,
like,
we have confirmed today that we have at least 4 listeners. So, you know, you might be...
Only because we gave tickets away.
Yeah, but you keep thinking... Well, you're forgetting cause and causation there. We told them there were tickets, and they called. So they had to be listening.
That's true.
It's not like we said, sent out a general notice, there will be tickets on the show, so you better listen.
Well, in light of your listenership, maybe we should give out, we like to use these tiny URL links that we've created, so if anyone would like to go online and sign that petition, it's at tinyurl.com/HV Powerline Petition.
One more time.
tinyurl.com/HV Powerline Petition.
And one more time, where's the next event?
Churchtown Firehouse, Route 27, Churchtown, October 18th, 1 o'clock.
We've been talking to Pam Klein, Ian Solomon, and
Will Yendick.
Will Yendick. Yeah, close. I got 2 out of 3.
Thank you so much for coming in and keeping us informed, and I hope...
And like I say, if you get 4 more signatures tonight, you can thank us right here.